Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Dribble Podcast. My name is Craig O'Donoghue from the West Australian newspaper, and throughout the summer, I'll be bringing you all the news and interviews for everything to do with basketball in WA. This week, we will speak to Perth Wildcats captain Jesse Wagstaff ahead of his 450th game, and then five-time championship coach Trevor Gleeson will join me in the studio for what will become a semi-regular spot on this podcast to provide his outstanding perspective on what's happening in the NBL. We'll also wrap up the WNBL's River City Rebound in Queensland, where the Perth Lynx went undefeated. But first, it's a big week for one of the Perth Wildcats greats. Jesse Wagstaff will play game number 450 when the Wildcats play Adelaide on Saturday. He's won six championships, represented Australia, and is the current captain. He is well and truly a Perth Wildcats icon.
Wagstaff again lights it up at the Kingo.
Wagstaff for three. All Australia back in it.
Off to Wagstaff. He somehow gets his shot away. And Jesse Wagstaff, 4 points already in the game. Wagstaff from outside knocks down a three.
Yes, game number 450. Jesse Wagstaff, welcome to the Dribble Podcast.
Oh, thanks for the introduction.
450 is a massive number, and I've interviewed you enough times about milestones to know you're going to try and say it's just another game, but it's not. So you're not allowed to say that this time. It's game 450, and that's epic. So what will this one be like?
Yeah, look, 450 is important. I think we mentioned every time to play, 450 games in the NBL is an achievement, but to play with one club, I think it's probably a bit more special. So, I'm pretty proud and proud to play for the Wildcats, and to play 450 is, I'm real proud of.
So game 300 was in 2019 when your kids were really young, then 350 and 400 were played when the border was closed. You eventually ran out into the court with your kids for that 400th when you all got back into the state. Will they travel with you this time? Will they run out with you? Will it be a bit different in terms of what you're able to do for this milestone?
No, nothing like that. No, not really. I know you said, don't mention it's just another game, but it kind of is. Just kind of business as usual.
So will they run out with you at any point? Are they hassling you, or haven't you given them any knowledge that there's another opportunity for them to get out in front of people?
No, potentially. It's just timing-wise, it just doesn't really work out. But, hopefully. We'll see, I guess.
So they're at the stage now where they understand what you are as an athlete. Is it important to you that they'll grow up being able to have some memories of you on court, whereas a lot of players retire with their kids so young that they have no real understanding of what happened?
Yeah, it is special. They, they enjoy the games, and my two eldest are actually playing basketball now. I coached my eldest along with my wife and Damien Martin and his wife as well last year, so... they enjoy basketball and it's special seeing them kind of appreciate it at the same time. So, the little one kind of has no idea. He just kind of enjoys the games and goes along for the fun of it. And it's probably on the iPad for half a game, but, it is special for them to actually, realize, what I do for a living and how special it is, in saying that the eldest still doesn't listen to me. And when I tell her to do something on court, she still thinks I have no idea. So I guess that's just part of being a parent.
So what's the coaching been like? Has that been really fun?
It has. It's been interesting, but enjoyable. It's pretty tough to keep six or seven-year-old girls occupied on a Monday afternoon for an hour after school and a big day, but it's been good. We had a great bunch, and as I said, Damo and Britt's kid Maggie was also on the team, so it's been great, growing up with them, and we've kind of experienced some big milestones, with Damo and Greg and past Wildcats. So to have those relationships and those continuing relationships is something, just another thing that the Wildcats has brought me.
I always wonder what it's like for people to rock up to play a game. They look over the other side of the court and the opposition have got a couple of Wildcats coaching the team or involved. I know Trevor Gleeson was coaching his son this year, and I always thought, man, the poor parent on the other side of the court must be thinking, what have I got myself into? Do you look over and sometimes think, sorry, but I know a little bit about the game?
Oh, it probably helped Trevor. I don't think it helped us much. the under-8 girls basketball isn't hotly contested, and if you looked at my middle one, she had her first game on the weekend, and it was a bit rough. But, at that age and, even for the next decade, it's just about having fun. And, that's why I originally started playing basketball. It's a it's a fun team game, and you know, that's why I played it, and that's why I kind of still play it.
Yeah, and you're still playing it at 37 years of age, which is awesome, really. I mean, it feels like athletes around the world are finding it easier to play for longer. Clearly, you've never been the age that you are before, so you can't really talk about experience of how and what it's been like for others. But we're seeing it in the NBA, players going for longer. It's really evident at the moment in the Cricket World Cup. There's a lot of older players well and truly into their mid to late 30s, and the last two AFL teams were stacked with older players as well. Are you going better than you thought you would a few years back when you're seeing other guys retiring mid-30s?
I didn't really give it too much thought, to be honest. I mean, I've never relied overly on my athleticism, to be completely fair, and you know, so I guess that helps. And you know, you add into my role, it's not as if I've ever played huge minutes. You know, I haven't really played in the off season too much, so you know, that probably adds into it as well. And then yeah, just the sheer luck. You know, I've never, knock on wood, had a really significant injury. You know, you look at like someone like Damo, who was incredibly unfortunate with injuries, it probably cut his career short. But, you know, knock on wood, I haven't had anything significant and been able to keep healthy, which, you know, I think a lot of it does come down to luck.
So you're playing quality time rather than quantity time. As you said, a lot of players will play all year round, but you're just playing at the elite level in big games as much as possible and not really burning your body or your mind out, I would have thought.
Yeah, look, the off season for me is, I mean, my wife's from the States, and it's kind of been a time to, you know, not reconnect with the family. It's not as if I'm absent during season, but you know, spend some family time. And you know, before COVID, we used to go back to the States, and you know, if I did want to play in the off season, I kind of wanted to commit, you know, fully. I didn't want to be in and out and do that a disservice to whoever I did play for. So it has come up quite consistently, but at the end of the day, you know, I always thought it was probably best not to. Yeah, and that's kind of, I guess, how it fell.
Families make such a sacrifice for their partners who are playing elite-level sport. Has it been hard for you to work out when to move on to the next stage of life and potentially go back and live in America and give her that family opportunity when you know you can keep playing because you're not falling away in any way, you're still playing well enough, but you know that she's going to want to get back there eventually?
Yeah, look, I'm not sure what we're doing. You know, we've obviously been in Perth for 15 years and, you know, it's a hell of a city to live in. It's tough to beat, and you know, her family's come out and seen kind of the life that we've built for ourselves. You know, we've got three kids in school. You know, my wife's an Australian citizen now and kind of settled. So what the future holds is I guess to be determined, but you know, as of now, I think we're pretty happy in Perth and kind of call it home. It's a phenomenal city to live in.
So you ended last season with 450, just on the edge. You could almost touch it, and you go on and you play 450. You'll end this year and you'll be within touching distance of Ricky Grace's record, which is 482, and you probably end next year and you'll be within touching distance of 500. Does it feel like there's always a little incentive and a little carrot sitting there going, go for one more? Because I imagine it'd be really hard to walk away from just that extra little milestone here and there.
Oh, look, playing another season in the NBL is a huge commitment, and I think you need to do it for the right reasons. I don't believe that, you know, going for a milestone would probably be the right reasons. It's, you know, it takes a huge amount of sacrifice, as you mentioned, by the family and yourself, and the I guess the processes you put your body through, and you know, it's only 28 games at the end of the day, but it's a huge commitment. So you know, if it came down to it, I don't think I'd do it just solely for a milestone.
You're approached by other teams in the off-season too this year, and generally people wanted to get you over, but you stayed with the Wildcats as this one club player. How much do you treasure that one club element of it? Because it's so rare.
Yeah, look, as I mentioned before, it's a lot of things. You know, it's the city. You know, Perth is a beautiful city to live in. It's the club. You know, it's been a phenomenal club for so long, and you know, we're just kind of carrying the torch, kind of, you know, the history before us and you know, the history after us. It's a long and successful club, you know. And then yeah, you did mention the one club player that is something special to me, and the kind of loyalty that I've shown to them and they've shown to me. So you know, it would be very tough to leave.
We've seen the club change a lot over the years. We've seen the league change a hell of a lot in recent years. What about the on-court product and the game itself? Tell us about the changes you've seen on the court in terms of the standard of the league and just the way that the game has changed tactically over the years?
Yeah, look, I think I seem to be asked this a lot, you know, and it kind of has rung true every year, I think. The league has gotten better and better and better. You look at the, you know, just take this year for an example. You've got guys, you're leaving the league last year and getting an NBA job straight away. You've got guys coming back from the NBA. You know, Delly was on the NBA roster last year. You know, and just years before that, you've got guys like Bainsey, Bogut. You know, the list could go on of guys returning from overseas, high-paying, high-quality jobs to play in the NBL, and then vice versa, you got guys leaving to join the NBL, join the NBA. Sorry. So, you know, you add to that the quality imports that we've seen in recent years. You know, obviously the change to three imports aids that as well. But the league really does get better every year. You add the next stars as well, and you got guys like Alex coming through who, you know, will be a phenomenal NBA talent. So, you know, it's not a cliche, and I do say it every year, but it really is true that the league just gets better and better and better.
Do you shake your head when you watch Alex play and train?
Yeah, look, you mentioned the changes in the league. You know, I think that's somewhat changed. The kind of, you know, there's not really a lumbering big anymore. You know, you've got guys like Alex and you know, KP at the five, who are athletic and explosive and talented and extremely mobile. You know, Alex, you forget how young he is, and, you know, obviously being asked about Alex a lot, but I think what's impressed me the most is his maturity and how he goes about his business. He's got a good family, and he doesn't get ahead of himself. He works hard, and if you need to give him advice, he'll take it and roll with it and try to implement it. So that's probably what's impressed me about Alex the most.
And yourself, you've had a weird start of the year. You had the head knock in Queensland, then you came and you started at the start of the year, then a couple of DNPs, then back starting on the weekend. Has it been weird working out where you sort of slot into this group?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a little strange, but, you know, it's kind of irrelevant. It's kind of not personal. I think, you know, JR's trying to, you know, figure out this group as well and, you know, where everyone fits. You know, you got 15 guys kind of wanting to play and, you know, JR's just trying to put the five on the floor that's going to win basketball games. So, you know, if I'm in that five on a given night, then great. I'll do my best on the court. But if I'm not, then, you know, I need to find ways to contribute. And, you know, the 40 minutes that, you know, I guess the media and the public and the fans see is a small part of our week. There's a big lead up. You know, we obviously practice a lot and scout and, you know, there's multiple other things that go on. So, you know, even if you don't get on the floor during game time, there's a lot to do and contribute. And, you know, are you preparing the guys that are going to play the best way? Are you looking at scout? And, you know, even on game night, if you're not playing, are you being a good teammate? Are you, you know, we're all on the same team. We're all trying to ultimately win that championship. So there's many other things that go on, you know, outside the five that are on the court.
So do you think from a captaincy perspective, it's just so important for you to lead by example and say, well, you know, I missed out on time as well, boys. So if one of you misses out, bad luck, get on with it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a team game at the end of the day. You know, we're not playing golf or tennis or something solo. You know, it's a team game. And, you know, at least in my 15 years in the league, you know, every single person at some stage in the year is going to have some sacrifices to make personally. And, you know, you've got to, you know, be on the same team. It's everyone's working towards the same goal. So, you know, I think by and large, everyone's been pretty good this year. And as I said, we're all working towards the same goal.
So when you're going into games, knowing you're starting compared to going into games, knowing you're coming off the bench, how does your mindset change or your even perspective on the role that you'll have once you get onto the court change?
Not really. I mean, my role on the court really doesn't change too much. You know, I'm not going to be out there shooting the most shots. We've got some incredibly talented guys. So to me, it's pretty simple and has been for the last 15 years, really. Just kind of come in, work hard, keep the intensity up, you know, play defense, box out and keep it pretty simple. It hasn't been rocket science for me for 15 years and I don't think it's going to change much, especially given my age.
Do you look at some guys and think they complicate the sport? Because that's one thing you've never done. You've always been able to keep it simple and know exactly what you have to do.
Oh, look, it can get pretty complicated. I'm not trying to do the game a disservice, I guess. You know, it is a very complicated game at times and you need to think and you know, be smart. You know, I'm not you know, I'm certainly not the best at it, but, you know, at the end of the day, we're trying to put a ball in a hole and trying to stop the other team from putting a ball in a hole. So when you boil it down to that, it seems pretty simple, but obviously the complexities involved are phenomenal.
So the team's 2-3 at the moment. How do you put the ball in the hole more and stop the opposition from putting the ball in the hole more?
That's a $1 million question, isn't it? Look, I think we've shown some really good signs. And, you know, as I mentioned before, we've got some really good talent on this team. You know, but I think we've been pretty inconsistent. We've had patches in games where we've been really, really good. And we've been patches where we've been really, really bad. You know, so I'm not going to say we're going to eliminate all those bad patches. That's probably unrealistic and a bit of a kind of perfectionist mentality. We're not going to eliminate that, but we need to minimize it. Either one, make sure that they're not as low, or two, even if they are as low, just shorten them up and snap back into playing our kind of basketball. So, you know, that is a $1 million question, but, you know, we'll be back on the practice deck this week trying to figure it out.
You had a big couple of weeks in terms of travel. You traveled to the US, you traveled to Queensland as well, and then you've got a few away trips going at the moment. Let's go back to that US trip. You had Mike Dunlap involved. You visited your old college in 2018 when you were over there with the Denver Nuggets game also. What's it been like going overseas in the past few years and catching up with some people who you wouldn't have seen for a long time?
Yeah, I've been incredibly fortunate, actually. You know, that obviously we can go play, you know, multiple of NBA teams, but we were just, you know, happy to play Denver and, you know, literally play across the street from where I went to college. So that was exceptionally fortunate. I don't think the wife was too happy, given that I ended up seeing her family, all 20 of them in Denver. But it was great to get back and see people I hadn't caught up with for ages. And then, you know, you mentioned the Vegas trip, and that was different, but it was very good. You know, I think everyone enjoyed themselves. It was good to play two games, you know, in three days against a quality opposition. You know, and I think that time away is always good, especially for a group that kind of young, and I mean young in its, you know, in this and us this year, not in terms of age, but to spend some time and get to know each other and you know, minimal distractions, and then and coming back via the Blitz, it was good as well to spend a few days together just as a group. So, you know, I think that time away is helpful. It can only be helpful moving forward.
And you've been such a part of so many teams that have been quite stable for so many years. This has been a big turnover this year, and you've had turnovers with coaching as well over the past couple of years. How big a challenge is it to get to know on court what everyone is good at, where you can put the ball for them, where they can put the ball for you?
Yeah, it is tough. It's obviously a process, and it takes time, and that's what you try to get through preseason and learn and have those relationships. You know, you mentioned the stability, and yeah, for a number of years we had, you know, a little bit of stability and some returners coming back each year, but you know, that's the nature of basketball, and JR's come in and put a good system in, and we've got some really good youth, and you know, we're figuring it out, and you know, we are only 5 games in. It is a short NBL season, but you know, we've got 23 left to figure it out and take steps moving forward.
I thought Friday night, despite the loss, it was a really cool night from a club perspective. Scotty Fisher was in town for the first time in 15 years, and his jersey hangs proudly from the rafters. And I was sitting between Andrew Vlahov on my left and Mike Ellis on my right, who were calling for different radio stations, and their jerseys are retired too. I was told Ricky Grace was also in the building as another bloke who's got the jersey retired. Then you got Paul Rogers sitting next to Fisher, Trevor Gleeson and Damian Martin calling the game for TV. Like, there were some absolute icons everywhere you looked throughout the building. Did you have any opportunity to catch up with people, or was it too busy playing, then getting home and preparing for a trip away?
Yeah, the latter. I did see Scotty Fisher in the crowd. I'm not sure if I've ever met him. But Silver Fox in the crowd. And but you mentioned that history, and that's, you know, what I think that is so special about the club. You know, it also keeps those guys around, and for them to still be part of the club is something special as well. But, you know, the names that you mentioned were, you know, are legends of the club. Obviously, pretty much all jerseys retired, and, you know, surely Damo's pretty close to that as well. So, you know, as I said, it's special having those guys around. And I mentioned before that we're kind of just the, you know, the torch carriers, and we'll pass it on to the next generation.
And in terms of this weekend, you've got another night game away. You're doing a lot of flying and playing in interstate at night rather than having the day game. And the day game means you can come back on the same day as the game. Do you prefer staying overnight after from a recovery perspective, or would you like to be able to come back on the same day? How does it impact you from a performance perspective and from a family perspective?
Oh, look, it doesn't matter too much. I mean, I think we only have a single this week, so... you know, we'll have 5-6 days of I'm not sure who we got after Adelaide, but 5 or 6 days of recovery anyway. So in terms of recovery, I don't think it matters too much. It's nice getting home, sleeping in your own bed, but at the same time, it's nice from a recovery perspective to stay there and sleep and, you know, get a meal and not rush. So, you know, it's I'm kind of neutral on either way.
Keep it simple, don't you? Don't overcomplicate things, as you said. Just do what you have to do and get every single game out of the way with a win or a loss and move on to the next game.
Yeah, exactly. And look, you know, we get, at the end of the day, we're going to play 14 home, 14 away. So it doesn't really matter when. It kind of all evens out at the end. So, you know, we play some on the road, we play some at home. It doesn't change too much.
Well, 450 is an extraordinary milestone. It's always fun talking to you about your career whenever you hit these milestones. And hopefully there's a few more. I think we'll all be barracking for you to go on so you can get the record and then to 500, even though that carrot isn't what you're chasing. But it's certainly something that would be really cool for the club. And I think every single time you get the opportunity to do these things, everyone grows a leg and thinks how awesome it is. So congratulations. Hopefully it goes really well for you on the weekend. And thanks for joining us.
Thanks, mate. Appreciate it.
Well, I'm really excited about this next segment because there are fewer bigger names or more successful people in the history of WA basketball. What time is it? It's Trevor time.
I wake up every morning trying to get our team playing the best and win the championship. We're playing terrific team basketball. That's what championships are made of. We're preparing for a grand final. Normally, when you play the right way, good things happen. We'll fight tooth and nail. We're going to do everything we can to make sure that trophy comes here.
Yes, 5-time NBL championship winning coach Trevor Gleeson is joining the Dribble podcast this season. Trev, thanks for joining us. Welcome.
No worries. I didn't realise you had the recordings, mate. I thought it was just one and done, but they come back.
I do come back. You repeat yourself over and over again.
There you
go. I was looking for Wildcats basketball and somehow I couldn't find that in there when I was searching for things the other day. But let's get this straight right from the start for you. Like, I spoke to you at the start of the year and you were adamant that you wouldn't be coaching this year. You're still contracted to Toronto. You're doing a lot of corporate work. You're doing a lot of time with the family, doing some media stuff as well and doing some clinics. So for people out there who are thinking Trev's looking for a job, you're not looking for a job, are you?
Yeah, not this year. I will coach again. And I would like to finish my career in the NBL, but that's just not right at the moment. Like you said, I'm under contract with Toronto until July next year. And right now, I've just spent 2 years in the snow finding out my wardrobe wasn't enough, and I'm enjoying this hot weather and enjoy some family time with my kids and wife. So I am certainly not looking for a position at the moment.
And for anyone who has forgotten, Trev's first captain at Townsville was John Riley. So it's not like he's after that job. Definitely there's a relationship there. So he's here to provide insight and expertise into what's going on within the league. And the Wildcats are obviously one of the biggest things going on in the league from a Dubway perspective. So we'll start with them and Bryce Cotton. He's been targeted heavily by teams in the first five games, held to 7 points by South East Melbourne and 11 points by Melbourne United. When you watch his games, if you're pulling together a film review of the first five games and how the Wildcats are playing and how he's being used, what stands out to you about the way Bryce Cotton is being used in this current team?
Look, I watched Friday night against Melbourne United. So, and Melbourne United probably got the best defensive guard backcourt in the NBL, you know, with Deladova and Shaili. And they were doing a tag team with him. And you know, it's no secret game plan to opposition is to let everybody else shoot the ball except for Bryce. They try to take the ball out of his hands, and that's a aggressive trap, aggressive denials, aggressive up the lanes and trapping him and making it hard for him. That Bryce has seen all that in the past, and it's really the counters that you got to get ready for. If they're taking the ball out of his hands, what's the next option? And that was something that we were very mindful of with our selection of imports. That we had, well, we had Casey Prather here first before Bryce. And then it was Tirico White. We had JP Tokuto wasn't a good fit with Bryce because they were trapping Bryce and JP couldn't shoot from the perimeter. So we were adamant we needed another perimeter guy because teams were taking the ball out of Bryce's hands. And he's used to that. And coming back through what I've seen, he's probably better off doing a little bit more catch and shoot. Like, he has two sets of skills, which is very rare. He can create his own shot off the dribble, and he can catch and shoot. Normally, when you get imports into Australia and the NBL, they can only do one set really well, either catch and shoot, and they're limited with their drive and finishing the lane. And that's what makes Bryce so special. So I think there's a lot more catch and shoot moving off the ball that he could create, because we know he can shoot the ball, and it's just getting that opportunities.
So the stats are really interesting. He's played more than 200 games. He's been restricted to 12 points 20 times in his career, 12 points or less. And the Wildcats have an 8-12 record when that happens. So we all know the importance of him scoring. He's not getting as many shots this year either. So is it a matter of getting the guys who don't know him very well, the Jordan Ushers, this Will and Alex Sars, Keanu Pinders, all these guys, to understand the importance of him getting more shots, more scores, because historically that's what gets his team wins?
Yeah, well, it's pretty much pecking order. Well, what we used to do is make sure Bryce got the double one shots, and then it was a pecking order. Then Tirico will get next, and Nick Kay next, and then we'll share the rest of them. But as a focal point, and from the other night, I just seen a few times where Wildcats did get the offensive rebound, and it could have been a quick kick out, and that's the easiest shot, 3-point shot that you can, because Bryce will get into the lane and drive and make a basketball play. He's not selfish that he'll just shoot it every. He'll make the basketball play. If the shot's not there, he'll pass the ball. But one thing that he's really good at is relocating to the perimeter. And he did that a couple of times, and the ball wasn't coming to him. And it's the same with like a Chris Golding at Melbourne. And everyone was last week was saying, oh, he only shot 7 points, and, you know, he hit 3 threes the week before and didn't shoot it again the second half. The ball has got to move. If you're a shooter, the ball has got to move. And if the ball doesn't move and you're a shooter and a scorer, you're going to get limited opportunities. So if the ball sticks in people's hands, if like Melbourne, if they don't share the ball around, and Chris is not going to see it. But once that ball starts moving and starts flicking around, that's when shooters light up and their eyes get big, because they know they're going to get open looks. And I think that's something probably Bryce is aware of.
We saw him dish off to Alex Sarr for those two match-winning points earlier on in the season. Is that a lesson for everyone? That if Bryce is prepared to pass the ball, everyone else should be flinging the ball around too.
Look, Bryce is an unbelievable player, and he doesn't let his ego get in the way. So those two plays, he could have quite easily shot the ball on both of those occasions and no one would have said anything. It's because it's Bryce, it's the best player, and go down the lane, and that's what we want. But he's made a basketball play. You know, the first one was a great pass out to him. That was a basketball play, and Sarr hit the three. So the next play to do it again, and he waited a little bit longer just so the defense was covering him. So that's the kind of player he is. He doesn't care if he gets the score or not. What he's after is getting the team winning. I don't think it's reciprocated all the way, because there's been a few other times there's been a kick out. And if you've got Bryce open on the three-point line, any shooter, you know, same with Chris Golding. If you've got an open shooter, that pass has got to go to him. And that's what you want, your best player shooting, your best player shooting uncontested shots. That's how you're going to win.
Another player who's been talked about a bit recently is Jesse Wagstaff, game number 450 for him this week. We spoke to him earlier on in this podcast, which was terrific. How do you see his role at the moment? He's starting, he's coming off the bench, he's starting again. Like, what makes him the great player that he is, and how's he best utilised?
Did you talk about his haircuts?
I didn't ask him about his haircuts. I've asked him about that in the past. He's had some rippers.
Yeah, a lot of them. So congratulations, Jesse. 450 is absolutely brilliant. I think it's the second most, just behind Ricky Grace at the Wildcats. Yeah. And that's where the coaching staff have got to work out what his role is on the team. So he didn't play for two games and then started last game. So they have to work out what role he is valuable for the team. In my time, Jesse was better coming off the bench. He was like the last big off the bench towards the end of the first quarter. And then the second quarter, I would try to start Damo, Jesse, and Greg Hyatt, because they played great basketball together. They weren't our rock stars of scoring, but they just played just teamwork and hustle and all of a sudden they get on a roll and then you put the support cast around him. So it's probably what group does he work with? Does he work best with Saar, where Saar's on the inside and Jesse can pop, or does he work better with Pinder, where Pinder can be around the basket and Jesse can stretch the floor and with the kick out three? So that's something that they got to come up with and be happy with. But they're still trying to tinker around with that, I think, at the moment, especially with the injuries.
You mentioned during the game on Friday night, there was a massive moment. 3:39 remaining, Melbourne led 74-70, and the Wildcats thought the ref had made a mistake when the ball went out of play, and everyone went to John Riley and said, call for a review, call for a review. And before we knew it, the ball was back in play, and Ian Clark nails the three. The system of coaching challenges wasn't in place for your time here, except for the NBL Cup. What? How do you see it? Should players be going to the coaches? Should coaches be saying, leave it alone and we'll call it ourselves? What's a system that works to avoid confusion and players get losing concentration?
Well, yeah, that was a big moment. But there was a number of them that were going to complain about the call and complain about the review. That's number one. You can't stop playing. You know, you play to the whistle, and no matter if it's good or bad, and here's me talking about good or bad, but you got to play to the whistle or the ball's in the basket, and that you keep playing. And, yeah, you talk to the coach, they make a decision, and you move on. I thought they weren't ready at that situation. The ball came in quick, and they weren't in correct position. And then they got caught out with their rotations, and Ian Clark hit a three. But with the challenges, obviously, if it's... As a coach, you will try to leave the challenge as late as possible in the game. So if there's a game-deciding call that you can say, hey, put up the red flag and say, review that. Or if it's Bryce Cotton's fifth foul. Out of the ones, you've got to roll with a few of them during the course of the game to use it early and lose it, then you haven't got it. And most of the time, the players aren't correct when they, hey, coach, I didn't touch it. Yes, you did. Or they'll complain about a foul and say, review it, then you watch the replay and they foul the hell out of them. So you've got to take it with a little bit of pinch of salt, but you got to play the whistle first and foremost, and then you've got the challenge after that.
The timeout, how important is that timeout? Because the stats at the moment say that coaches have been successful 36% of the time this year on foul challenges. They've been 100% correct on the out-of-bounds calls. World Cup cricket at the moment, they're going at 24% from the players who are reviewing things, but they don't get to see the vision straight up, whereas the assistant coaches do in the NBL. Like, 36% isn't a great number. So is the timeout more important than the foul call, do you feel, in most situations?
Yeah, look, it depends. The timeout for me was either we aren't playing well and we need to regroup, or this... we need to make an adjustment or to stop the rhythm of the game. If the other team scored two threes or two layups, or just to stop the rhythm of the game, because basketball is a game of flows. You know, normally there's three big runs in the game, and if you control two of them, you're going to win. But I use that timeout to stop the flow, or if we have to reset. Timeouts... I would rather go into the locker room in the game with a timeout still in my hand, just in case there's 0.4 of a second left, then I can have a timeout and advance it. And I think we did that one time down in Hobart when Bryce hit an unbelievable shot to send it into overtime. So, yeah, the timeouts are important to set that up. And that surprises me with how low percentage the challenges are. And I tell you, whoever's on the video, that's tough. And... like in the NBA, you have a lot more cameras than they use in the NBL. So they're watching and they're pretty spot on. And in the NBL hasn't got as many cameras. And now that guy on the screen has got to make a split decision for the head coach to make. It's a tough, tough gig for that assistant coach. And normally they're a younger guy and lacking experience. It's a tough position that you don't want to really be put in.
Talking about coaches, Adam Ford, Aaron Baines incident earlier on in the week. We had John Riley fined as well in round one. Both incidents where the NBL tried to keep it a bit secret. Media weren't allowed into the tribunal. The visions just got released, leaked by media for the Adam Ford incident. So, an Aaron Baines incident. What's your thoughts? Should everything be public? You've been in the NBA where everything seems to come out. Should everything be public, or would you like it if you were coaching at the moment for it to be kept hush-hush?
Yeah, it's your tribunal. Most of it should be kept in-house in the tribunal. I don't agree with one person on the panel. I think there's got to be at least two, and then you've got the third to make a split decision if it's one way or the other way. I think it's tough with one to not have a different view. And, you know, the same with Baines and Ford. You probably had a different view of what came out. And I didn't agree with Stu Lash coming out before the tribunal and saying that about 40. I thought that should have got fined. You know, he should have got fined or suspended for coming out and saying that before the process is being fair. And it's gone through the process and they made the decision and then films came out. So you get a different look at it, how it transpired. So I would like to see, and it's not how many tribunals are there a year?
Barely any.
Yeah, one or two. So what's the difference if it's three or one? Put the guy in charge on a retainer and you bring in two ex-coaches. I don't know, you bring in an ex-player, an ex-coach, someone that can have that perspective of what the coach is going through, what the player is going through, and then make a calculated decision. And maybe someone that hasn't played basketball at the elite level or played sport at the elite level. So, yeah, I'm a fan of having a little bit more open there. And it's what's get released. You don't know what's hidden under the... I would like to be a little bit more transparent of what's going on. And that's from experience and from sitting on the outside looking in.
Yeah, stuff certainly does. Now, you talk about experience. You're doing a lot of talks, doing a lot of clinics this year, corporate stuff especially. Tell us a bit about them. And if people want a 5-time NBL championship winning coach to come and talk to them, how do they get in touch?
Yeah, well, you jump on the website, trevorgleason.com, and it's kind of been snowballing since I've been back. It was not something I've really been getting out there promoting, but, you know, talk to executives with about leadership and teamwork, how they work. So I've just recently was in Broome with Richie's IGA, Retrovision and Westrack and Eagers Automotive, and I got one for Golf Management Australia on Friday. So, yeah, it's something that actually I'm really enjoying. I'm enjoying going through what's important for success, how do you sustain success after first winning, how do you maintain it, and putting the values and the behaviours in place, and how do you inspire. It's making me revisit and what's important. And so, yeah, I get to share a lot of those things with the executives and managers, corporations. I'm really enjoying it.
So trevorgleason.com, that will be in the podcast description. If you're listening and you're looking to find where it is, trevorgleason.com, we'll make sure it's on the podcast description for the Dribble all the time. So thank you very much for coming in. Really appreciate your time. We look forward to having more Trevor time throughout the season.
I enjoyed it. Thanks, Craig.
Well, Perth Lynx had a big weekend in Queensland, winning all three of their games. They started with a 94-93 win over Sydney Flames, and Amy Atwell was huge when it counted. She nailed a crucial three-pointer, then she won a steal, which led to a layup, and in the blink of an eye, the team went from what looked like being a loss to a thrilling win. Atwell had 17 points in that game. Import Airy McDonald started with 22 points, 5 assists, 4 rebounds, and 2 steals. Annalie Maley had 8 points and 10 rebounds, while Mila Goodchild produced 14 points and 9 rebounds in what was a really promising display from her in her first game in the WNBL for the Lynx. 2 days later, they come up against Townsville Fire and won 86-80. This game was weird. Very weird. The Fire took 8 players into the game and 3 fouled out. Then Steph Reid suffered an ankle injury, so the coaches got together and agreed to let one of the players who'd fouled out come back into the game. Gotta love practice matches. Makes it very different for everyone when you're having situations like that going on. But Maley was absolutely superb. 18 points, 17 rebounds. She's a dead set machine on the boards. We've known that for a while, but seeing it for the Lynx is... it's really impressive. It's going to be really interesting to see how she goes this season, giving them that sort of a weapon on the board. So import Emily Potter had 20 points and 6 rebounds. McDonald produced another 19 points and 6 assists, while Goodchild had 17 points. And then on the final day, it was Perth 98 to Adelaide 90. Goodchild top scored with 21 points. Maley had yet another double-double with 14 points and 15 rebounds. Could have scored 20 points, really, but she had some layup issues, which were driving her absolutely nuts. She was actually laughing at how many shots she missed. Couldn't believe it. Steph Gorman looked really impressive. Airy McDonald finished the tournament with a plus 36 scoreline for the Lynx when on court over those three games. So Michael Walters talked up her speed on this podcast last week, and that was really evident throughout the weekend. She's going to be an amazing player. She's one to watch for the Lynx. So They have another fortnight until round one, so there's a fair bit of time for them to prepare. They're still hoping to pull together one more practice match against an NBL 1 West select sort of team, as the Wildcats did before they went and played against the G League Ignite over in Las Vegas. So that's it for this week's episode of the Dribble Podcast. Thank you to Jesse Wagstaff and Trevor Gleeson for their time. The Wildcats play Adelaide on Saturday at 5 p.m. You can read all of your basketball news in the West Australian and at thewest.com.au. Make sure if you want Trevor Gleeson to help out with your corporate speaking or anything like that, get on to trevorgleeson.com. We'll be back next week with another episode of the Dribble Podcast.